Welcome to Not Artificially Sweetened, a weekly podcast where we reflect on all things diabetes. Your hosts are specialist physician Stan Landau and diabetes specialist nurse Michael Brown. We are passionate about using our talents to change lives for the better. Our mission is to build bridges of insight and understanding between people with diabetes and the health professionals that facilitate their care. Nothing is off the table here as we discuss real people, their real issues and stories, and together discover real answers to many vexing practical issues in diabetes and its management.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Not Artificially Sweetened with me, Dr. Stan Landau, and joining me as always, Michael Brown.
Hi, everyone.
This is episode 32. Many thanks to those of you who've given us a like and a share and have subscribed to our channels. Remember, our preferred social media platform is Spotify, but you can listen and download this podcast from the Google Podcast platform as well as the Apple Podcast platform. Please keep sending your thoughts, comments, and questions to podcast@cdediabetes.co.za. Michael, spring has sprung here in Johannesburg, the first rains. We've seen catastrophic flooding in the Western Cape amongst other provinces over this past weekend. So we hope that all of our listeners, families and friends and people with diabetes remain safe throughout this time period. Brings me to an interesting thought. Some of the cases I've seen in the clinic this week when thinking about safety, one of the most commonly expected outcomes from people who are new to our facility is their diabetes management will instantaneously or perhaps very quickly be achieved from high blood glucose levels. And myself and the diabetes nurse specialists spend a lot of time with people with diabetes going through the deliberate reasons why it can often be dangerous to rapidly lower blood glucose management. And I know, Michael, you've been in diabetes care at the coalface for a number of years, and you would have seen cases like this as well.
For sure.
So if you're flying an airplane at 38,000 feet, you're often surprised to hear that as you fly over Ceres, the captain will tell you that they're already getting ready for the descent. And that's still a long way out of Cape Town. And I guess if you land that plane very quickly, you're going to feel awful. And similarly, for those people with diabetes whose blood glucose levels are sitting in the high teens or even higher, rapidly reducing blood glucose levels will leave you feeling awful. And you can have a cluster of symptoms that are typical of hypoglycemia that occur in the mid-range. Perhaps the sugars are 7, 8, 9, or 10 even, and you have all of the shaking, the sweating, the hunger, the palpitations that are commonly associated with blood sugars, perhaps under 4. And the big danger for lowering blood glucose quickly is that you can provoke a couple of clinical conditions. And one of these is called insulin edema, where as you rapidly lower blood glucose, the body holds onto fluid, results in puffing up and swelling of the legs below the knees, can result in swelling of the face, and the person with diabetes is left feeling awful. And that's the body's protective way of managing the flux of glucose and sodium and water within our bodies. It is eminently treatable. Another common condition that you see with too rapid a reduction in blood glucose is a condition that's abbreviated TIND, and that stands for treatment-induced neuropathy of diabetes. And you can actually provoke extreme pain and discomfort in the feet of people with diabetes, as if their feet are on fire, worse than any kind of existing diabetes peripheral neuropathy.
Terrible condition.
And again, if you take it slow and you reduce blood glucose levels appropriately, you can in fact reverse that condition. Michael, in your years of diabetes practice, are these conditions that you had seen historically?
Absolutely, Stan. And as you know, it's one of my favorite topics because I think it's one of those things that go with our ethics in medicine is to first do no harm. And that means we need to understand the physiology of insulin replacement and of lowering blood glucose. And we need to take it slowly. And certainly I've seen the neuropathy as a result of too rapid drop of blood glucose. I've seen insulin edema and I've seen relative hypoglycemia, where you feel like you're low, but you're not. And that has very little basis in the literature, but I have seen it many times clinically.
I think it's important for people with diabetes and their care team to have their expectations set in parallel right from the get-go. So for example, if you're heading for a hip replacement and you've waited for your elective surgery for months and months and months and months, and your diabetes management for whatever reason isn't optimal, it's reasonable not to aim for a rapid reduction in blood glucose levels.
Right.
And perhaps if we use the HbA1c as a surrogate measure, we tend to drop HbA1c by perhaps 2% in 3 to 4 months would be reasonable. And many people may have an expectation that we can fix, in inverted commas, the diabetes quickly so that you can be at surgery the week after next. And even though hip replacements are things that take years and years to manifest, it's just a watchword there. And I also neglected to mention that you can, in fact, in certain patient populations, provoke worsening of background diabetic eye disease.
Right.
We've known this for a number of years from the mid-1990s. Perhaps this data has been looked at more recently with a publication in Diabetes Care in September for a different population of type 2 diabetes, but again, something worthy of noticing. And perhaps for those patients who are put onto an insulin pump where you see very rapid improvements in blood glucose, you need to be sure that you're not going to make matters worse, as you said, and I can't say it enough, first do no harm.
So Stan, thanks very much for that very pertinent clinical reminder. Something that's coming into my radar is World Diabetes Day, and that's coming up on the 14th of November. World Diabetes Day was started back in the 1990s by the International Diabetes Federation and the World Health Organization. And the day 14 November was chosen because it was the birthday of Sir Frederick Banting, who together with Charles Best were the first people to isolate an extract of insulin derived from animal pancreas. And from that followed the first real treatment for type 1 diabetes, which ultimately saved millions of lives worldwide. Each year, World Diabetes Day has a theme, and the theme for this year is to know your risk and know your response. This comes on the background that 1 in 10 adults worldwide have diabetes, around 90% have type 2 diabetes, but the most disturbing fact is that close to half of these people are not yet diagnosed. Now, this is something that many people battle to get to grips with because in our minds, if we don't feel sick, well, then there's no problem. But unfortunately, diabetes is the ultimate liar and deceiver. You can have diabetes for many years, have no symptoms whatsoever, and yet be exposed to the chronic risks of having this condition and poor blood glucose, blood pressure, cholesterol, and other risk factor control over that time. So, in keeping with this year's theme, the International Diabetes Federation has on their World Diabetes Day website, which is worlddiabetesday.org, put up an online risk assessment tool, and we'd urge you to go and have a look there and check out your own personal risk. And being that many of the risks for type 2 diabetes are lifestyle related, finding those risks may also help you to manage those risks in a preventative fashion. So we'll say more about World Diabetes Day as the date gets closer, but I just wanted to bring it to the attention of our listeners so that we can not confine World Diabetes Day to just one day in the year, but to keep our approach to provide advocacy throughout the year.
I think it comes up time and again on this podcast that planned preparation for aspects associated with diabetes care are mandatory. And here, planned preparation in the likely or perhaps unlikely event that you may yourself have diabetes or an intermediate version of diabetes. We historically used to call that pre-diabetes. So forewarned, forearmed, and those catastrophic complications that need never occur can now be mitigated even further.
For sure.
I think this is a great time to take a short break and hear from our regular contributors to the show, the SA Diabetes Advocacy Group.
SA Diabetes Advocacy offers a 4-week advocacy training course. It's entirely online and totally free. We want to empower as many diabetes advocates as we can. What is the purpose of this course? To empower people living with diabetes and people caring for those with diabetes to create meaningful change in South Africa. We want to give you all the tools and knowledge and strategy to make a difference in the lives of those with diabetes. We've specifically designed it to be super helpful, interactive, and not overwhelming. We already know how much you have going on in your lives. In the course, we will cover diabetes in South Africa, diabetes education, advocacy strategy, and collaboration and cohesion. Please visit diabetesadvocacy.org.za and click on advocacy to see more information on the course and to sign up for our waiting list. We will be releasing the new course dates in November.
Thanks so much, Kirsten, and for reminding us about the most valuable course that you offer. When those dates are announced, please make sure that you add your name to the list. It's a course that you should not miss. Well, it's time to introduce our studio guest this week, and we are really honored to have a salt of the earth character with us. I've been so impressed since I first met him, and I asked with some trepidation, would you mind joining us on the podcast? And he graciously, as is his character, said, of course, I'd be honored. And so with that, we welcome Abdullah Khan to our studio this week. Abdullah is a well-known community pharmacist. He practices from Athlone Pharmacy in Cape Town. He is known as an advocate for children, youth, older adults, community health, and diabetes. He's described by members of his community as their social worker, psychologist, confidant, and pillar of strength. He has a passion for diabetes, and around 10 years ago, he was the founder of a support group for diabetes called Diabetic 101. So with that introduction, Abdullah, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about how you got into being a pharmacist and then your forays into community health and uplifting and supporting the health of your community and your advocacy efforts so far.
Hi, everybody, Michael and Stan. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I feel really honored. Going back many moons, I started my first year of university at the University of the Western Cape, did BSc for the first 2 years and decided this year, man, let me try something else, you know, and then changed to pharmacy, graciously. We had a fantastic leadership program then, did pharmacy. Obviously went into second year immediately with plenty of credits for my first year at BSc, excelled in the second year, and then I got involved in a bit of pharmacy politics, leading the pharmacy student association, which was very interesting then, you know, because that time the democracy, we were kind of isolated then, but became very interesting in terms of getting involved with pharmacy politics, getting involved with the PSSA, the Pharmaceutical Society of South Africa, because of our affiliation with the Student Council. We were called UCAPS, the University of the Western Cape Student Association. We had one seat in the Pharmaceutical Society of South Africa, so we had like 10 meetings and get involved with politics and get involved with laws, et cetera, which was really overwhelming, especially as a student. You're usually not exposed to these type of events at university level. And so that was an avenue for us to actually get exposed to all these laws and changes, etc. Then obviously I qualified. I did my internship at the local pharmacy in our area. And then I became interested in diabetes. I don't know, I had an affinity for diabetes. I was very conscious of my diet. I was very conscious on being fit. It was a lifestyle combination. And then I just became interested in diabetes, lifestyle changes, insulins, and all these medications then already. When I opened my own practice after I did my internship, I worked for a year. And then we had an increase in the incidence of diabetes in our area generally. And then I had a rep coming to me and she had diabetes herself. And she asked, Mr. Khan, would you like to start a diabetes support group? I said, I'm quite for diabetes. I want mine. And we had a local library in our area, which we used as a base for our meetings. We advertised in the local newspaper about our meeting we'll be having, and that posted in the pharmacy as well. We weren't called Diabetic 101 yet. We had 15 people on our first meeting. People don't like to come and sit and listen. So we said we'll make it very interactive. We have an attraction that people come there, make it very interesting for them. So we had one or two meetings. We had an improvement in the second meeting, and then the rep became ill. Then we went dormant for about a year or two. And then I said, listen, we need to restart this. I'm becoming hungry now for a support group. We sat down, we chatted, a couple of my colleagues, and we decided on a name called Diabetic 101. So we said, we'll have a one-on-one discussion with our patients if needs be. And that was the idea on 101. So we called ourselves Diabetic 101. And then we had another agent who does glucometers, Tommy Abdullah. I'm going to support you. I want to be a co-supporter of this Diabetic 101. So I said, fantastic. Then we realized what the needs of the people. So we said, listen, what we'll do, we at an event, we'll have one or two prizes just to kind of attract the people to the meeting. And then before we had a keynote speaker, we used to have maybe someone playing a flamenco guitar. We had a magician. We had someone doing a bit of motivational speaking as an introduction before the keynote speaker to break the ice, chill. And then we'll have obviously our keynote speaker. And after that, we'll have question and answers and a couple of prizes. It's grown so much. So we've been running for about 10 years now. At times, we attract close to about 150 people at our event. And we have it on a Saturday morning. And the local Athlone Library are so overwhelmed to actually help to host this because it's an advertising for them as well. And then what we do is we have specialists in the field of note. We have our cardiologists, we have the ophthalmologists, we have the best of endocrinologists, the cream of the crop. And so we'll tell them, look, this is a group started by volunteers. It's an outreach program that we wanted to give back to the community. It's so important. And so one of the aims and objectives of Diabetic 101 was to educate, to encourage, and to ensure that the people with diabetes can take control of their own condition with better understanding.
It's super the way you set that out. Michael, what impresses me here, and I don't think we've had a guest who's had something as hyper-local as the setup here. I mean, Abdullah, you went to university around the corner, in a manner of speaking. You did your internship in the neighborhood. You opened your first business in the neighborhood. You started a support group in the neighborhood for the community, by the community. And I suppose it's the only time the librarians at the Athlone Library are happy for people to make a noise in their center. Because usually one thing's pretty quiet, but you've really shaken up a part of Cape Town that was almost, I didn't grow up in Cape Town, but thinking back to my university days, it was almost a fringe community. Yeah. It was kind of the other side. And when you dig into the stories and the narratives you're telling here, it's a golden treasure there.
Yeah.
Were the community skeptical at all coming and sharing this? Because you often get the idea, perhaps, and correct me if I'm wrong, in closed communities, people like to keep things to themselves. And maybe there was a degree of embarrassment about sharing one had diabetes versus the next. Was it difficult to get people to open up and talk about diabetes?
Yeah, initially, you know, I would say there was a bit of stigma attached. People with diabetes, it's not a train smash. It's not a death sentence. You understand? There's hope for you guys. And initially, you had this kind of barriers. But you know, with time, we had a psychologist. We had the right people, I think, initially to encourage these people to change their mindset. That's the main thing, to change their mindset and understand diabetes as a condition. And I think over time, we succeeded. Because the other thing, the members who used to come to the meeting has actually formed a working group, which shows guys support each other. They didn't have to wait for a meeting for education or question and answers. So they had this little support structure, in a support structure. And so if I may just mention, we have the likes of Darren Green all coming to the fore. I feel honored. The super specialist, like one of the best vascular surgeons, Dr. Fo Lee, honoring to our invitation. What was very interesting, I had someone from the other side of the fence as well. You know, the banking guys. Just to give the audience or the attendees a taste of the other side as well and not be tunnel vision. So we had a spectrum of people actually coming to our workshop and addressing the people. We told them, make sure you take your medication on time, make sure you exercise, and make sure that your diet is important. And from this, then they formed a little walking group. And so we have 10, 15, 20 of them, and then they'll do their walks on a Monday and a Wednesday. They go around the common, do a 5K, they come back, they talk their numbers. What has also happened is that this core cluster do wellness events as well. And so you'll see our bright blue sweaters, you know, with Diabetic 101 all over the show, advertising, you know, Athlon Pharmacy or Diabetes 101 and wellness, etc. And so it's a good advertising in a sense as well. Sure. But I always get people coming, Mr. Khan, I saw the people there. So they help people. Tell me what this is about. So it's a good form of advertising and reaching out to the people.
You're literally walking the talk here. And in essence, I tend to think of the big corporates, these giant listed companies in pharma. And here you are, in essence, I say this in jest, a mom and pop shop, yeah, who, having started off as a standalone, not necessarily linked to large listed companies, doing more for diabetes to single location, having grown this community from nothing, yeah, to where you are now. I mean, that's true grassroots, yeah, scenario. That's outstanding. And the community have bought in.
Yeah. So what I'll do is I'll advertise in the local newspapers to say, listen here, we're having a Diabetic 101 meeting. Please join us. And no extra information. So we have a lot of phone calls, inquiries. We obviously give the venue and the date and the time. And we have an enormous spectrum of people coming. It's not only the locals. We have people from the outskirts coming. And we have major advertising in the pharmacy as well. So most of my people are in the areas who need to come. They'll come and they'll spread the news around. We are on Facebook. We also use the other platforms, you know, to advertise the event. And we actually confirmed a speaker for the November event for World Diabetes Day as well.
Wonderful.
She's excited. She actually wants to bring a whole team of doctors to the event. She is a geriatric specialist, and sometimes we feel that with diabetes, there's a lot of dementia, the depression. People need to accept diabetes, so that's her focus on that day, maybe. And also, she asked me if she can bring a whole team with us. If time permits, you can bring a team, but you know, you have like 1 hour. At the end of the year, we have a fun event, so we have some lovely prizes. I make it interesting for them. That's important. They look forward to come. It's not another lecture, they're told the same thing. So it's eventful, it's fun, it's interactive, and that's the main idea of these workshops.
I think for anybody listening who still thinks pharmacists do nothing other than dispense medicine in a box and back in the days made suppositories, and perhaps, Abdullah, when you were training, used to make these compound ointments for whatnot, I think that notion is dead in the water. Pharmacy today, it's a dynamic, vibrant career that has both an entrepreneurial and a retail component, but yeah, over and above that, look at the hats that we see in this description that we have here, social worker, psychologist, confident, pillar of strength, all of those attributes that really weren't necessarily part and parcel of your undergraduate training at Western Cape for pharmacy. These are things that you've subsequently acquired and mastered in your day-to-day. And again, just highlighting, we had Imran Bismillah, one of our early studio guests, himself a pharmacist, again, highlighting that notion of how central the pharmacist can be, ought to be, should be in the broader diabetes team.
Absolutely. And you know, very interesting is the good point that you make there. Sometimes in our communities, either they don't have access to the local hospital's medication or the queues are too long. You understand? So the people with diabetes, they'll think twice to go to the clinic to get the medication. Alternatively, going to a doctor is expensive, they can't afford it. So they find the pharmacy as an avenue, as a first line where they can go to and express thoughts for argument's sake and then the conditions. And so I think that is where it needs to be very important, especially from a diabetes point of view, to know your goods, you understand, and be able to treat them appropriately and with the best of ability. And I told Michael the other day, the last week or so, I've seen so many cases and I could think back, sure, I did this in that course, you know, I did this in that course. It's fantastic, man.
What I love in your story, Abdullah, is that you have taken up your rightful place within the wider diabetes care team. You've moved your role as a pharmacist beyond a dispenser to all the ancillary roles that, as we said, pharmacists can and should be taking up. Over the 10 years of your support group, through the wide choice of guests that you have chosen, it shows that you had deep insight into all the challenges and the needs of diabetes, what can go wrong, how it can be remedied. And then we find you on our course. And I'm particularly humbled by the fact that someone with such deep community and clinical experience has chosen to come onto the CDE Academy Foundation course in diabetes and upskill himself, one would assume. But I don't want to assume that because, as I said, I think you have a history of deep insight into diabetes. So tell us about your interaction with our course. We'd be interested to know what indeed we have taught you, if anything. And if we have, how has it changed your practice within your community?
When I started the interest in diabetes and started the workshop, I always wanted to do it. So the reps would come to me, that's kind of idea. I'm busy with a CDE course. I'm a SWAT, you know, there's 1 week in Johannesburg, we're going to go down and it's going to be like a brain teaser and all this and that. Then one company was going to sponsor me. I said, Abdullah, we'll sponsor you. Get yourself with a CDE course. We don't mind whatever the cost is. In fact, they actually flew down someone for me for one of our talks. They flew down one of the speakers from Johannesburg at their cost. Just to attend a workshop as a presenter. So they told me, Abdullah, we'll sponsor you. And then for some reason, I fell flat. And then COVID came. And then I told myself, listen, I made up my mind. I'm going to do the course, come what may. And then I spoke to one of the companies. And I told him, yeah, I need a bit of sponsorship. And it's a long story. I need to write a resume and all this and that. I said, okay, no, thank you. I told myself, listen, I got a couple of pennies. I paid up front. And I told them, I paid already. Why did you pay? Why did you pay? We got money lying there. I say, I asked you the first time, nothing happened. And so it was going to be a journey for me, you know, to upskill, like you said, my diabetes knowledge. And from the word go, I promise you that it became so exciting. I used to put a lot of effort in early morning, late night, and I made sure I covered my tracks. I actually completed my task way before the time, but I look forward to my early morning session, evening session. And what is exciting about the course was the different modules we have. And I particularly used, and for some, in my practice, you know, in the last 2 months, I had cases which actually relate to the foundation course. I could tell the guy, you need to go to the hospital. You need to check your ketone levels. And I could relate to the condition and what he was suffering from. Very importantly, I also learned that you need to like have role players, you know, interacting with other specialist doctors. I could refer to them. We could discuss with them regimen, treatment plans, and I build a good reputation with my doctors in the area as well, referring a lot of patients to them, which I felt as needed care or attention. And I could individually use those modules in my practice. And people with diabetes would come, like last week, I had someone came with a Sweet Life magazine. They said, I must come speak to you about my diabetes. And so I could address each individual appropriately, man.
If there were, say, 3 to 5 concrete things that you learned that you can apply daily, what would they be?
So a simple, like today example, the gentleman, he was on metformin 500 milligrams twice a day and his sugar 16. I say, and so what did the doctor say? Erica, no, he said, I'm just use 500 milligrams twice a day. I said, no, man, ask the questions. When did it start? Since the last 2 months has been so, and et cetera. I said, okay, I think we need to change your dosage to 1,000 milligrams twice a day for the starters. Consult the doctor. That's my suggestion. Then we go on to maybe, if that doesn't help, we go on to maybe your glycoside MR, 30 or 60 milligrams a day. But I always just check with a doctor. And before we go to the third line, you know, were one or two cases. Like today, I had to tell my uncle, I think you need to go on maybe one of these Douglas, one of these things, but you consult the doctor because your metformin is not working, your glycolase is not working. You need to add a number 3 on there, and then that will scare you, but insulin will be the last resort. But don't, insulin is not a death sentence. Insulin does well to you, but let's see what happens. I have a lot of people with peripheral neuropathy coming in. We have people coming with cellulitis and all these clinical conditions coming with the feet, for argument's sake, any pulses or any feel sensation and things like that. In fact, my last diabetic 101, we had a podiatrist there talking to the people about podiatry and diabetes going together. And so all these modules, I promise you, was very beneficial to me.
Abdullah, we teach people on the course to work together within these large professional teams. Given the fact that you are, in essence, a medicine man in your community, have you found resistance, pushback from the local general practitioner population who've kind of said, oh, you know, he's only a pharmacist. Yeah. Here you come telling me about modern treatments. What does he know? And talking on foot pulses. How's that played out in your community?
In fact, we have 3 doctors in the community who actually know about Diabetic 101. They actually approach me now. They want to come to a session with me. That says a lot.
Nice.
So if I've seen patients with them, I definitely think they actually respect me in terms of my suggestions and my decisions. Two of them just spoke to me last week, told me, listen, I want to be on your next program, because they can see the results. I think the results show why they want to be part of it.
Yeah. It sounds like you have become the eyes and the ears in the community for the other members of the diabetes care team. You've mentioned problems with cellulitis, foot problems, medication problems, diabetes management problems. And because the person with diabetes probably sees the pharmacist the most frequently out of all of the members of the wider diabetes care team, you really can act as their eyes and ears, and you can alert those practitioners and the person with diabetes to something that you see coming on the horizon and act to intervene long before it becomes a major problem.
It's very true. And I think you need to upskill your knowledge. You need to know the products available and ensure that you stay abreast of developments in diabetes.
And I think that's what we see. And you're coming on a course like we offer after so long in diabetes. It shows the humble spirit that you're never too old or too wise to learn. And I think that's what sets apart the really good diabetes practitioners from people who dabble in it or who have no interest in the field. People who really have a passion for diabetes know that the curve of information is progressing at a rate faster than we can actually keep up with it. And so that makes it imperative for all of us to try to keep up with the rapidly advancing field.
Especially post-COVID, we've seen such an increasing amount of people with diabetes. And so when I see a script, I just tell them, welcome to the club. Welcome to the club. I make them feel so comfortable. Tell them, here's my number. Whatever you need, please feel free at any time to contact me. Sometimes a simple thing of they're not being shown how to do a finger prick, for argument's sake. Yeah, simple, simple stuff. And you know, one other fantastic thing I've learned now is the length of your needles. You know, one patient, Mr. Khan, don't worry, I am doing it with no pain.
Right, practical stuff, yeah.
I think for listeners out there who've had great experience at pharmacies, share that with us on podcast at cdediabetes.co.za, because it's the unsung components, exactly that. Changing the needle, guiding people for the injection techniques can make a world of difference in the management of diabetes long before you're shelling out more cash for a more expensive insulin. And Abdullah, I want to come to cost, because I always thought of Athlone as a less affluent community, particularly in the pre-1994 period. You're at the coalface of literally the prescribing component of the diabetes. What happens in a community from an affordability point of view? You have this diverse group, some of whom are on these expensive medicines like Ozempic and Trulicity, and others who are using the genericized forms of metformin.
Yeah,
do you
yeah.
come across in a day-to-day sense where it's heartbreaking? Somebody comes in with a prescription. Michael spoke about insulin, the birthday of the developers of insulin. You know, 100 years later, it's still an expensive drug. What happens at a community pharmacy level with cost?
In my area, we have a relatively challenging in terms of financial community. Most of them attend the day clinics and the day hospitals for the insulin, for argument's sake. And so we will probably prescribe on medical aid the insulin, for argument's sake. But in general, you'll have your metformin guys coming in here. But when it comes to the insulin, it becomes very difficult for the man in the street to be able to afford proper insulin. Very challenging, and it's very difficult. And then it's just sad, because this guy needs insulin and he doesn't have access to insulin. It's hard so.
Particularly if you've had long relationships and are going to have a long-term relationship and you want people to have the best care. And whilst it may not be the most expensive insulin, just insulin itself, access to needles and testing glucose strips, which are not uniformly available, at least here in the Gauteng Department of Health, unless you meet very specific criteria.
Yeah.
So a commonality amongst many, many South Africans, and a theme that's come up many times on this podcast series.
What I've done also with the strips that you mentioned now, I've marked my strips down relatively so that it becomes affordable. So that's a loss leader for me. Once the people know the numbers, they can take better care of themselves. In fact, today the report said, I said, okay, I'm fixing my price, probably make the least amount of profit. There's no profit in there, for argument's sake. But at least I'll give an opportunity of a guy to be able to test his sugars and know exactly how to respond to any condition that he may have.
Oh, wonderful. Abdullah, as we come to the end of the show, I'd like to make use of your wisdom and maybe ask you three questions. With the benefit of 2020 hindsight, what would you say to new students who are entering the field of pharmacy, especially with the challenges of diabetes on the horizon? What would you say to health professionals about the place of the pharmacist in the diabetes care team? And what's your message to people with diabetes?
Okay, let's start with the first question with students. I think basically you need to have a passion if you're really interested in that area or that field. It'll only make you a better person if you have a passion for that subject or that topic. And I think because it's a lifestyle condition, it's very easy, I would say, very relative. You know, you can relate to people's lifestyle, the diets, the exercise. It's not difficult. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to be able to do that. And so I feel that if you want the best well-being or wellness, then I think you can just take some more interest in lifestyle changes or encouragement, but you need to have the passion, the affinity for diabetes or affinity for that subject or topic. There's a big need for that. A simple example, how you treat your patient, the way you talk, counseling, the coaching for argument's sake, that's so important. You just need to have that affinity or, you know, that passion for that topic or that subject to make a much better consultant. And the second question that you asked me, pharmacists play a pivotal role in the circle of therapists, if I may call it. We see the patient much more often than the doctors or the specialists or even the clinics. And I think if we can upskill ourselves to the degree that we can play a pivotal role in decision making, we'll obviously change the lifestyles and diabetes as a whole. I'm confident about that. But we need to be obviously equipped for that. And your last question was the future of diabetes. We just need to be very proactive and we can take control of our condition. We can take control. We just need to be very positive and psychologically motivate people, encourage them and allow them to take control. A simple example is that you need to obviously change the goal post for different people. You cannot have like the same standards for a younger person and old person. So sometimes they think, oh, diabetes man, it must be under seven. So you just need to sit and chat with them. Maybe we can use skill to encourage these people with diabetes to motivate them and take control of their condition. They can control themselves, essentially.
Abdullah, many years ago, when my kids were extremely young and teething, I wish your pharmacy had been opened at 2 o'clock in the morning, because in Cape Town, there's only one 24-hour pharmacy on Durban Road. I'm talking 15 years ago. And if you've ever driven on the N1 at 2:30 in the morning to find Empacod suppositories for your kid who's teething and screaming at the top of their lungs, had you been open at that time, I think your pharmacy journey would have made that excellent. In a nutshell, this has been a transformative experience from your undergraduate years. You are light years away from where you were. That just laid this foundation for this superstar that you are in pharmacy. And I think the community you have are blessed to have you as this kind of guardian angel, as Michael said, the touchstone for the community.
And for people with diabetes.
It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show here. May you continue this journey, because it's so refreshing. Everything is cut and copy these days with big stores and this, that, or the other. You're providing phenomenal service out of a pharmacy in a community in South Africa. Keep going, and kudos to you, and may your clients only derive excellent health in their years ahead because of you.
Thank you so much, man. I'd like to thank you. I'm honored to be part of your show. And I always say this is an outreach program. There's no personal benefit for us here. It's just giving back to the community. That's what we ought to do. You know, giving back to the community.
Absolutely. We can see that so clearly. There are three types of people in the world: those who make things happen, those who watch others make things happen, and the rest wonder what happened. You are the former, the first one. You are someone who makes things happen, but in a very unique way.
Yeah.
There's basically two types of power: one, authoritative, brute force power, and then there is servant leadership. And I think you provide a fine example of the latter, someone who puts their life on the line for other people. And when I did a search on your name, Abdullah, it's amazing. Just type in Abdullah Khan, pharmacist, Athlone. It's absolutely unbelievable the accolades that come up. This humble man who's joined us in the studio, and we're very honored to have been with you today. And we wish you much blessing for yourself and for your community in the years ahead. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, man. Like this one customer was telling me, Abdullah, you must copy and paste. Copy and paste. We all need you.
Excellent. So with that, we'll sign out and we thank you for joining us. Please remember that our email is podcast@cdediabetes.co.za. We welcome your questions. Please pay particular attention to our weekly polls and our listener questions. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll see you again next week. Bye-bye from us.
Thank you for joining us on Not Artificially Sweetened, where we aim to build bridges of insight and understanding between people with diabetes and the health professionals that facilitate their care. Anything we discuss is for your reflection, education, personal growth, and entertainment only. You join this podcast at your own risk, and we are not responsible for any omissions, errors, or unwanted medical outcomes. Please note the following important, specific disclaimers. For people with diabetes, the health professionals on this podcast are not your personal caregivers. Always discuss any new information with your diabetes team before acting on any aspect of it. The views and opinions discussed are those of the hosts only and do not represent those of any other entity. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you encounter in this session. Anything you learn or experience here cannot substitute for personalized, professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. For health professionals working in diabetes, always discuss any new information with your clinical team before acting on any aspect of it. You are personally accountable and liable for any choices made in a clinical setting according to your level of training and legal scope of practice. Any information or insights gained here must be used with your professional discretion and with the developing base of clinical evidence, local and organizational laws, regulations, guidelines, and protocols. Good luck with your diabetes care missions. Till next time.
And it's a wrap.
Yay!